everyone thinks that the person in the back can just sit back, you know, put a couple beers in their bottle and just relax and sit in the back, and, you know, hey, we can go for 62 miles. No, my friend.
DizRens Radio episode 440 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive in today, just want to maybe let you know if you're new around these parts, or remind you if you've been around for a little bit, that each and every month, one of my favorite things to do is give away a free training program, training plan for the race of your choice. You can use it whenever. You don't have to use it right away. You can sit on it for a couple of weeks, couple of months, couple of years, whatever. Once you win it, it's yours to use when you want to use it. And I mean, that's really all the fine print and the details about it. All you need to do to enter, it's real simple. Head over to the homepage, dizruns.com, and right there on the homepage, there's a little bit of information that says, click here to enter. And you click that, and bada boom, bada bam, you're good to go. And if that is too much of a hassle for you, all you need to do is type into your browser right now, on your phone, on your computer, on your tablet, whatever you're using to listen to this episode, just type in dizruns.com/giveaway. And that'll take that'll bring you right to the entry form. You don't even have to go to the website to enter. And then that'll you know, again, you type in your information, bada boom, bada bam, you're entered. And the beauty is you're automatically re-entered each and every month. Real simple. Unless you choose to take yourself out of the drawing, which is up to you. You don't want to win anymore. You can do that. But once you're entered, you stay entered in every month. Pick a new winner from everybody who has been entered in the past. So if you haven't entered your name yet, do it. Do it. The next winner comes at the end of the month, always at the end of the month, and maybe it'll be you, but you can't win it unless you're in it. Dizruns.com, right there on the homepage. Click to enter, and good luck. Now, let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey, guys. All of us have various obstacles that we have to overcome in our day-to-day lives in order to, you know, get our runs in and train for whatever race is next on our calendar. Today's guest has had to navigate a pretty serious obstacle on his way to running several marathons, including a few Bostons, and also recently completing his first century bike ride not too long ago. You see, today's guest has retinitis pigmentosa, which is a degenerative eye condition that has rendered him legally blind. So without any further ado, it is a pleasure today to be able to welcome Mr. Edgar Suris to the show. Thanks for joining us, Edgar.
No problem.
And guys, if you want to connect with Edgar, he is on Twitter. Every once in a while, you'll show up there and leave some love on Twitter. And you can connect with him there with the handle at big_ed25. So big_ed25. And of course, we'll have that linked up and anything else that we talk about today that makes sense to link to in the show notes for today's episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/440. So Edgar, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a pretty easy answer, and sometimes it really, you know, takes us down some you know, rabbit trails to try to figure out, you know, kind of tie in this answer to everything else. But either way is fine. It's just a great fun way to kind of start off the chat. And that is just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Well, I would have to say the marathon, because I like the mystery. I like the challenge of trying to find out what our body can handle throughout 26 miles. And some days you can be happy and joy, and some days the race can come and slap you in the face. And I also look at the marathon like life. It has peaks and valleys, and you got to know how to fight through those valleys whenever they come through in life.
Yeah, certainly, and there's you know, there's the most obvious tie in there with that line of thinking. So we'll just go there, yeah. And we'll kick it off there, and you know, we'll kind of maybe circle back to the running here in a few minutes. But so you, if I got my story straight, you weren't, you know, the retinitis pigmentosa, it's not something that you were, like, you know, legally blind since you were little. Like, that kind of came on a little bit later in life, right?
Yeah. We used to live down south in Coral Springs, and about 18 years ago, we moved here to Lake Mary, which is about an hour from Lakeland, which is where you're located. Mm-hmm. And my parents started noticing I was starting to bang into walls in the house, you know, having problems in the dark, and it took me a couple of eye doctors, and they misdiagnosed me a couple times, and eventually they found I had RP. It's short. That's a short term for retinitis pigmentosa.
So, I mean, when that, how old were you when you realized that was the case?
I was about 12, so, you know, middle school years, and I've been legally blind since I was 16.
Wow. I mean, you know, I almost feel like an idiot sometimes asking these types of questions, because, you know, I mean, I am blessed to have, you know, eyesight and not know what it's like to not have full capacity with the vision. And so to ask a question like, you know, how did that impact you, or how did that change your life? Losing your eyesight seems just absolutely ridiculous, but, at the risk of sounding like a fool, can I ask? I mean, you were still young, obviously, but how has things really changed, or I don't know. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to ask, but maybe you can kind of fill that in a little bit, because I'm sure you get that question, you know, more than often than not.
Yeah. It actually has made me a better person, because it actually it's made me fight for things when people doubt me. It's obviously made me look at life a little bit in a different way, because of course you got to adjust.
Right.
And I like to learn, so it obviously has helped me learn about myself and other aspects within the visually impaired world, especially through running and how to go through life through technology. And it sounds a little not harsh, but I think the disease has actually helped me more than hurt me as a person.
Can you elaborate? I mean, I can think of maybe a dozen different ways that could be the case, but for you specifically, how do you think it's helped you more because of it?
I mean, I've always been hard-headed and stubborn. I guess that's one thing my family has always shown me. So, but it's helped me, like, through just proving people wrong. Mm. I love having a chip on my shoulder. That's helped me, and I think the disease has helped me have that, because I could have gone the other way and started getting, oh, sorry me, I want the pity. And in my eyes, I try to look as normal. So that's another hard thing. People, when they look at me, they go, oh, he can see. And then when I start walking around, people are like, oh, snap. The guy is like Mr. Magoo over here, can't see a lick, especially in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's stuff like that.
Right. To kind of bring it back into the running realm, were you a runner before you started to lose your vision, or did that come on afterwards?
Funny enough, I don't know if they still do this in middle school or high school. They used to do the mile physically test for a mile.
Right.
And I hated running the mile. I just hated running. And in 2005, to make my high school varsity basketball team, the coach told me, you have to be in shape to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, go out for cross country. So on June 3rd, 2005, they said for summer practice, mile and a half out through Timaquan and back. And after that, I just started got in love with the sport.
Gotcha. So if I'm doing my numbers right, like, you were maybe kind of, you'd been diagnosed at that point, but you weren't to the point of being legally blind at that point.
No. I could still run by myself, you know, see enough, 2005. And then in 2007, probably when I started going to college, is where I was legally blind then, and my vision really got worse, and I needed to start running with guides, or as I call them, seeing eye dogs, because literally they are my eyes.
Right.
You know, they are my dog in a way. And the way I run with them is with a bungee cord tether. Mm. The way you make the tether is I go to a local boat store and I go, hey, where do you guys have bungee cord by the foot?
Mm.
And they're like, yeah, it's all the way in the back. So, you know, I have my mom or my brother, and I go buy it about I go by about 8 to 10 feet of bungee cord, so I can make a couple in case I lose one. And I tie, my mom ties around one around my wrist to make a knot there.
Mm-hmm.
And then she ties one around her wrist, or a little bit bigger. And we'll make about 2 feet distance in between, you know, from knot to knot. And the person will put it on their hand or in their wrist. I prefer my wrist because I have more feedback, more feel, more control. Some people like to put it in their elbow. Some like to put it around their waist.
Right.
Just so when their hands come through in their form, it hits the tether.
Mm-hmm.
So they know. And then that's it. It's all about communication. After that, you paint a picture and I start going.
Right, right. I am wondering, and I was thinking about this before we started chatting today. With the guides, do you have you know, I mean, you've run a handful of races and you're doing things and you know, training, and I feel like maybe I heard that you're training for Chicago as well. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'm training for Chicago. I got done with a nice I use a company called the Run Smart Project. They're with Dr. Jack Daniels, the guy who wrote Daniels Running Formula.
Mm-hmm.
Really great company. I've used them for about 2 years. They put me through the ringer this morning. 2 mile tempo with 8 200s and 2 mile warm, 2 mile cool down. That was not fun. So I'll be feeling that tomorrow on my shakeout run.
Definitely, definitely.
But yeah, I'll be going to Chicago in October. I've been wanting to do that race for 5 years, and I finally got in last December through the lottery, and I was like a kid at Christmas.
Awesome, awesome. Well, congratulations. And you know, what I'm wondering about, where I was going with that is, you know, you've run several different races. Do you have the same guide for every race, or do you have a pool that you choose from, or how does that process go about?
I try to get the same person if they're available,
because
you know, you get the feedback, you get the loyalty, but you get the camaraderie of like, oh, they know me, they know the communication details,
right?
And that's if they're the same pace, obviously, and there's no work interference or travel interference. But if not, I know a couple people that I've run in the past. Like example, I knew a guy from Track Shack in Orlando, and he's gotten me about 5 or 6 guys. He's got a pool. He's like, hey, I got you XYZ for this race. And if not, I'll ask a friend or ask a running club, hey, you guys have any guides that could run X race or X mileage for practice? And goes from there.
Gotcha. Gotcha. When you know, like you said, and I guess maybe this is where I was kind of trying to go with it, because, you know, like you said, if you have somebody that you know, and there's a relationship, and they know, you know, what kind of, you know, how much communication is involved, and how vivid of a picture that needs to be painted, because as I'm sure you're aware, and you know, if nobody's ever stopped to think about it, you may not realize it, but like, you know, for me to paint a picture, like, I can see everything, so it's easy to skip over this little detail or that little detail that for me doesn't matter, but for you it could be something that you know, could be a tripping hazard, could be something that you need to be aware of, whatever. And so it's a lot different for someone to try to explain something to you while running a race, as opposed to, you know, for me to just be talking about the things that I'm seeing. So when you're in a situation where the one or two people that you've worked with the most, or that have run with you the most and been your guide the most, aren't able to join you for a race, what's the learning curve like? How you know, if something happened where you had to run with somebody new, you know, without a whole lot of time to train together, how does that play out, or does it just turn into a different type of run completely, or you know, kind of what does that situation look like?
So let's say if you were crazy enough one day to say, oh, I want to come guide me for a training run or a race. What I try to do most of the time is get together with the guide. So, for example, it'd be you. You know, we'd email back and forth. We'd meet at my house or meet at some trail, paved trail, and we'd practice. I'd be like, I need you to call out, you know, stuff on the floor, the branches, speed bumps, like tripping hazards in general. Right. And if it's in, when it comes to the pace, I usually have a pace alert beat set on my Garmin.
Because
of course, Mr. Magoo, how's he going to see it? Garmin.
Right.
So I get a pace alert, which I try to stick to most of the time. Or if not, my guide will say, oh, we're going too fast, and he'll look down. And if it's a nice stretch of pavement. But we'll practice beforehand the race to get a little comfortable instead of just, okay,
right.
Show up at 6 a.m. at the registration booth, and we're going to race, you know, for example, half marathon, and we'll learn on the fly.
Right, yeah, that probably doesn't end well if that's the situation.
Yeah.
So you've like you said in the intro, you've done, you know, a number of races in Boston a few times. When did Boston come on your radar? Was that something that was a goal from the beginning, or did that come about some other way?
Funny story. It was on my goal. Obviously, every runner in the world wants to go to Boston. That's the Mecca for us. I was on the phone one day with a blind athlete, and he goes, "You know, you can get into Boston through the visually impaired division, which is a 5-hour goal time."
Mm-hmm.
That's the BQ time, 5 hours. Doesn't matter what age or gender, it's 5 hours.
Straight up, okay. I didn't realize that. Gotcha.
Yeah. So I was like, oh. So in 2009, I did the Disney Marathon, and I ran 4:48.
Mm-hmm.
So I qualified, and I signed up, and I ran in 2010, and I was like, oh, because I always thought that I had to go in through the very strict qualifying times, in my opinion, back then. They were 3:10 back then, now they're 3:05.
Yeah, now they're even more strict.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, great. I'm never getting to Boston until I'm like 70 or whatever, you know, some ridiculous old age. Mm-hmm. But it was a blast. I honestly felt spoiled after that race.
In what way?
They give you a blind bib, a guide bib, so they, you know, the other runners can know. The expo is just out of the world. We spent too much time this past year at the expo, in my opinion, but you know, you want to soak it all in.
Right.
The crowd is just amazing. Wellesley is as much as advertised. You can hear them 3/4 mile away, and just soaked it up. And no, I did not kiss a girl because I was going for a PR. So I was like, I'm not risking my time for that. And after the race, you get done, and they have a little bag of food and Gatorade shakes. And so you got your little post-race bag of food ready to go. You don't have to bring anything.
Nice. What, you know, in Boston, and folks that have listened to the show a bunch of times know that anytime that somebody talks about Boston, I have to ask more questions about it, because that's you know, like you said, that's one of my goals. That's right up there at the top of the running goals I have, is to qualify and to run Boston. But you know, again, thinking about it from a perspective unlike what I would normally think of, I mean, for you, you're visually impaired, you don't be able to see as much, you got to communicate with your guide, and everybody talks about the crowd support and how great it is, and like you mentioned, you know, you can hear Wellesley from, you know, 3/4 mile away, and if you can hear him that far away when you get there, it's going to be pretty darn loud. How does the communication for you, which is obviously very important, is it a struggle at Boston because of all the crowd support and how loud it is, and what a you know, atmosphere is that everybody loves and kind of maybe takes for granted, that for the visual impaired people, like, that can be a problem?
Funny enough, it is a little bit, because, well, I'll say first, the tether has a little give to it. So the guy could just tug to the right, and if I'm too close to them, I'll bump into their shoulder a little bit. So it's no big deal, they know that going in. And if not, either they'll yell at me, or I'll try to use the great hearing that I have to hear what they're saying. And this past year, funny enough, when we were going the left on the Boylston Street, I literally could not hear my guide because it was so loud. And we bumped a couple times, you know, when we were returning, because I couldn't hear say left. I knew we were going left, but I didn't know how sharp of a left in corner we had to go. So. But you're right. Communication in Boston is a little, but with enough practice and enough you know, detail like tether practice, we get around with it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's no, what's the other choice? I mean, you have to figure it out. But I could just see that there could be some spots where it gets a little bit dicey, but hopefully by those points, like at least, you know, the course is thinned out a little bit, or at least as much as Boston is going to thin out. So it's not quite as crowded and hopefully you're able to navigate still, even with a couple of bumps and things along the way.
Yeah.
What about, yeah, I mean, I guess kind of just like what I was just mentioning, though, what about a crowded course? I mean, I've run Disney a few times, and, you know, I know that there's some spots on that course where things get really congested really quick. When you're in a tight space, you know, is it a situation where maybe the guide is saying like, hey, we got a visually impaired athlete here, so give us a little bit of room? Or, you know, how do you navigate when the race conditions are kind of, you know, shoulder to shoulder and things are pretty tight packed?
I get really nervous when it gets crowded races, so I cannot stand the beginning 2 miles of a race or the first water stop of a race. I call them the minefields.
Right.
Because they literally are like minefields with all the cups on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to your question, when it's really crowded, I will tell my guide, pull the blind card.
Right.
To say, we got a blind runner coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Half the time they'll hear you, half the time they won't. So the guide will just have to be a jerk about it and, you know.
Right.
Yell it out or tap on the shoulder like, hey.
You got to move.
You got to move. Give us right. A little bit of space here. Come on. And the guide will try to keep me probably about two, three steps behind the person in front of me, mm-hmm. so I do not clip the back of their heels.
Right. Have there been instances where that's been an issue? Whether it's clipping heels or just any type of congestion issues where it's like, you know, a fall or an ugly confrontation or anything like that, or are people mostly pretty cool?
I've had a couple, and I just get really ticked off because, mm-hmm. you know, I got a blind bib that's as big as a probably five, the big note card, just double that size that say blind, and people still don't read it and say, you know what, you're just a normal athlete
right.
who gives a rip.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a couple where I'm like, you know what, F you, whatever, I'll see you later.
I'm just kind of laughing at the irony of saying no, see you later. Sorry, that maybe it was poor taste on my part, but I thought that was funny.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I've had a couple falls that, and the guides feel bad. I'm like, no, it was not your fault. Mm-hmm. They freaking cut me off.
Right.
And they couldn't say anything in time. But I've gotten up and kept running, so.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, I know that there's times that I maybe get a little bit frustrated, or you're trying to cut through people, or, you know, when there's folks that are running and, you know, they're running with their friends, they're three or four or five wide, and it's hard to get around them. And I can only imagine it would be doubly frustrating and like you said, very, very nerve-wracking when you get in some of those situations. So it's you know, again, one of those things that I get frustrated, but I don't think about it, how it might affect you. And I'm, oh, like I couldn't imagine. I would be, if I was the guide, I would be the biggest jerk. I mean, I would just be yelling and pushing people and like, just deal with it. Like, you know, you got your headphones in and you can't hear. Sorry. That's your fault. Get out of the way. Like, oh, yeah. it'd be a mess.
And I can't stand people that wear headphones. I know they love to run with it, but I think it's just a safety hazard when it comes to a race.
Yeah. Yeah. I am guilty. I wear them, but I definitely make sure that it's turned down enough that I can hear when somebody's coming behind me. And certainly if somebody's saying something, I make sure I can hear that. But yeah, it's still, I like I said, I'm guilty on that one. I can't try to be a goody goody on that one. I am victim of that. But, do you try to, you know, kind of along these same lines of the conversation, do you try to avoid the big races as much as you can? Although obviously Chicago, New York, Disney, I mean, you know, some of the big races, it's going to be crowded, but you know, at other times, do you tend to try to stick to the smaller events?
In a way I do, in a way I don't, because I do like the big crowd support. Mm. It helps you so much in the last 10K when we are literally in our worst atmosphere physically and mentally. Like, can this finish line get here soon enough? But some of the big races just stand out so quickly that it's just like, oh, no big deal.
Right.
And then the little ones, obviously, they're so little that they're going to thin out quicker than the bigger races. So I don't mind.
Gotcha.
Either one.
Just got to make it through that first water stop.
Yep. That's all I always tell my guide. I tell myself, we get to the first Minefield, we're good to go.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, again, I don't have it the same way you do, clearly, but I do that the same way. I do that same thing a lot of times in my races too. Just get past the first water stop, and then things will spread out, and there's less congestion, and at that point, you know, you can start to really run your own race, it seems like.
Yep.
When kind of turn back the clock again a little bit here, maybe we should have had this discussion a bit earlier, but you know, it kind of comes and goes as we do. When you had gotten into running, when you took up cross country and you know, you could still see enough that you didn't have to have a guide and things were all right there. But as the vision kept declining and you had to rely more and more on other folks, what was the reaction of friends and family like? Were they fairly supportive? Were they trying to maybe discourage you from doing it, trying to be overly protective? How did that those conversations play out?
Funny enough, my mom did not want me to run in high school because, you know, not overprotective, but, you know, the mother and mothers
right.
always be, oh, got to keep him safe, you know. In a way, he's nuts. He's not a runner. He's never liked to run, and now he wants to run cross country.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, he's kind of been a doubter and a cheerleader in a way, because he's the one that got me into doing my first marathon in 10 years ago.
Wow.
I did OUC in 2006 and I told him, I'm going to do a marathon. And he goes, you can't do one. So, so there goes the big chip on the shoulder.
Right.
Got to prove him wrong. So that was the first one. And then after that, it's just been, they've all been supportive and making sure I got guides and making sure I'm in shape weight wise, mm-hmm. diet wise. And it's almost like my support team in a way. So that's good.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's definitely nice to have them have your back. Cause it's hard enough. It's hard enough when you can see and just running a marathon, and then let alone you start to add in, you know, if you don't have family support, if work hours are crazy, if this, that, and the other, if you can't see, you know, trying to line up right. guides. I mean, you know, another thing that we wouldn't think about, like, I can just go out and go for a run whenever I want to. But, you know, if you want to go for a run one day, like, you got to make sure you can line somebody up who can go with you, too. So there's no shortage of obstacles that we all have to deal with. But some of them are, you know, like I said, it's just easy to take things for granted when you can see. And it's nice to have this conversation and be able to think of things a little bit differently for me and hopefully some others as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're doing all these things with Runwise, and then you also, like I said, or like I think I was told, you had a century ride as well. What's that like when you can't see? Is it a tandem bike or a guide situation? Like, how does, you know, again, another thing that I would never think about how it would play out, you know, in my own life. How does that work for you?
So last summer I was having one of those, not marathon blue moments, but just the motivation wasn't there and the fire wasn't under my belt. So there's a cycling store here in Sanford called D2 Cycling. And the owner knows me through my dad. And he told me, I got this crazy idea. If I can find a tandem, which is the hardest part of the whole thing, because they are two bikes put into one. So if you take the front tire off the second bike and then plop that back, you know, put two together,
right?
There's your tandem. So it's almost like it's literally like driving a semi truck. Double, you know, double the size, mm-hmm. double the weight. And he goes, well, you want to do a century ride? And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Couch the century?
That's a big jump.
So, and I was training for Space Coast Marathon too at the time. So I was like, let me pump the brakes a little bit. So I was able to twist his arm into a metric century, which is 100K.
Okay.
So, and it was done in Tomoka State Park here in Ormond Beach.
Mm.
Just a little fun ride. So we got on the tandem, and the way the tandem works is everything is synced.
Mm.
So the person in the front's called a captain, and the person in the back's called a stoker, technically.
Okay.
Person in the back, the stoker, literally cannot see a thing because the person in front blocks your vision.
Right.
So if you want to see, you got to literally go to the right.
Lean out.
And
mm-hmm.
go to the left. Kind of like you roll down your window in your car and put your head out the window if you want to see what's in front of you.
Okay.
And everyone thinks that the person in the back can just sit back, you know, put a couple beers in there
and just in their, relax and bottle, be long for the ride.
Relax and sit in the back and, you know, hey, we can go for 62 miles.
Mm-hmm.
No, my friend. The person in the back pedals the same amount as the person in the front.
Mm.
Both pedals are synchronized. So if the person in the front pushes down to surge a little bit, person in the back has to catch up and put the same amount of effort.
Right, right.
So, and same thing, it's all about communication. Mm-hmm. Person in the front says, hey, we're turning left and 30 feet or you know, counts me down. And,
right.
And he's got control of the gears, the brakes. So literally, I'm just sitting back there pedaling and chatting away.
Chatting and leaning a little bit when he tells you which way to lean and
yep.
Go hang out. Wow. Do you foresee doing more of those type of events, or was that a good one and done and stick with the running now?
I've actually done, I did another Metric Century ride on Memorial Day.
Mm, okay.
We rode from the shop in Sanford to a beach called Playlinda. It's like in Cape Canaveral over there.
Okay.
It's a little beach. You know, and I said, you know what? I got to do another 100K to make sure I got another one under my belt. So, I was supposed to do one last Sunday, and I started Chicago training, so I told the guy, sorry, right. Chicago comes first. I got to put that to the focus.
Well, but I would imagine, though, I mean, you know, a lot of runners, you know, you do a little bit of cycling for some cross training. I mean, I imagine it'd be good for you for that.
Yeah, I do have a little indoor trainer in my garage with my brother's hybrid bike. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of a road bike and a mountain bike put together. And it was just grabbing dust. So I told him, can I borrow it?
Right, right.
And he said, yeah, what the hell?
Jump on it. Let's go.
So I'm on Amazon. You know, the beauty of Amazon. You can't find it there. You can't find it anywhere.
It doesn't exist. Exactly.
So I found a nice cheap magnet trainer, bought a speed and cadence sensor for my Garmin, and put it all together, and 2 or 3 days a week, I'll jump on there for 45 minutes to an hour, just easy recovery, cross training, as you said.
At this point, you know, with the races you've done, the chip on your shoulder, you know, thing that you'd mentioned before about, oh, tell me I can't do it. Well, I'm going to go do it now. Why do you keep running? Is it something like I'm not even going to give you any more than that. I'm just going to ask, like, why, you know, you've done it, you've proven it that you can do it to people. Why continue at this point?
In a way, I like the mental relaxation or mental relief as like a stress reliever. Cause I do get grouchy if I don't run.
Mm-hmm.
And friends and family do notice, so they say go for a run or you know, go for a bike ride or something. And it keeps me in check with myself when it comes to diet and nutrition. Makes me stay disciplined, because I don't know of much runners, but I do love my food, especially my sweets and my pizza. So
right.
And it does keep me in check. I mean, I even though, like you said, I've done it, you know, I've done Boston, I've done running for years and stuff, I still like to prove myself and others out there that I can go that little bit faster in a marathon or in a 5K. And as everyone that runs a marathon knows, that distance, there's always something to figure out in that distance. You can do 30 marathons and all 30 can be different. There's always something to learn.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. There's no two races are the same, and even when you run the same race multiple times, they're not the same, and there's always things to learn. That's 100% correct for sure.
Yeah.
Any I mean, training for Chicago, that's one that you've been looking at getting into for a while now. Is you know, and you know, God willing, everything will go smooth, and you'll get that race there this fall. Are there other races out there that you've got your eye on, or you're trying to get into, or would really love to run at some point down the road?
I'm a really huge Oregon Duck fan. Everyone thinks because it's the football team and they're doing well, but no, I mean, it's a running city, it's track town, you know. So the Eugene Marathon is definitely on my bucket list. just because it's Oregon University, it's Nike town. Mm-hmm. And my parents, my family knows that I'm an Oregon guy. So
gotcha.
That's one on there. And then eventually what I'm working to is to do a triathlon.
Mm.
The only obstacle is, of course, family.
Right.
Because, you know, where are you going to swim? How are you going to swim? Who are you going to do it with? And just to give the listeners a little detail on how the swim goes, it's a 5-foot tether that goes around the waist. So there's 5 feet max in between mm-hmm. knot to knot. And the swimmer, both swimmers swim in line. So okay. one cannot be in front of the other. If not, that's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all communication. It's a little weird because if you have the tether too long, both swimmers' arms will get stuck in the tether when the arm comes up
right.
through the stroke. But if it's too short, you're going to bang into each other,
right.
elbowing, both of us elbowing each other throughout the swim. So it's, and that's one of my adventures and eventually work up to an Ironman. So that's my
wow.
big, big goal.
That's awesome. How long has triathlon been on your radar?
Since 2008.
Okay. Is there a target date yet, or is it still something that's in the works?
It's in the works because I want to get that 4-hour barrier in the marathon.
Mm, gotcha.
So hopefully I can get it this fall in Chicago, and if that's, you know, cross off the list, then
shift the focus a little bit.
Of course, I'm going to keep running because
right.
you got to run in triathlon.
Right.
Focus a little more on the swim than the bike.
Gotcha. That's great. So, as we're getting close to wrapping up here, Edgar, I love to kind of close off with what I call a philosophical question. So it's something that's very open-ended. Certainly no right answer, no wrong answer. It can be a short answer. It can be a medium answer. It can be a long answer. But just kind of your take and your, vantage point on a topic. And I'm actually I've got a list of 4 or 5 questions that I tend to, you know, kind of pick one depending on how the conversation goes, but I'm going to go off script a little bit. And if this is a bad question, if this is something that you'd rather not answer, just tell me and I'll mm-hmm. go back to something else. That's fine. But, I would just be curious if, and maybe it's something you've thought about, or maybe you just say, you know what, this isn't even worth my time to think about. And again, if that's the case, tell me, no worries. But,
all right.
if you had a day where, you know, you woke up and said, "Holy crap! I can see, and I have 1 day." What would, and you could run. So you're going to run one day, and you're going to go run. It could be a race day. It could be just a day on the trail by yourself. What would you do for that 1 day that you could see perfect 20/20 vision? No big deal. Go for a run. What run are you going to do?
It'd be different, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a huge adjustment to be like, holy crap, I can see. I don't need anyone to, I don't need any help. I don't need any guide. I can look at everything. So it'd be a first. But I think I would go overseas
mm-hmm.
just to see the whole, you know, European side of the world. Since we've been in the U.S. for so long,
mm-hmm.
just enjoy Europe.
Gotcha. Anywhere in particular, or just wherever you landed?
Wherever I landed, really. I mean, this a scenic day, like mm-hmm. you said. It's just 1 day. Just take all 24 hours
and go explore.
Make it a little ultra in a way. What the hell? Just make it an ultra. 24 hours. Just run, walk, where I go.
Gotcha. That's certainly a good enough answer for me. And I would wherever I could end up in Europe, I'd be down with that too. So I'm right there with you. That's a great answer. Thank you, Edgar, for the time today. Again, guys, on the Twitter, if you want to connect with him, say hi and see how he's doing. Kind of maybe follow along, especially as Chicago gets a little bit closer. Maybe there'll be a little bit more update on how things are going. @big_ed, the number 25. And again, disruns.com/440 is the link for the show notes for this episode. You can obviously again have Edgar's Twitter handle linked there and a couple other things. things that we've linked to that or we've talked about that would make sense to link to there. So, Edgar, thank you for the time today. Thanks for humoring me on some of my ignorant questions of what it's like to run without the eyesight, because obviously not something I've experienced. But love what you're doing. Certainly, it's inspiring to hear a story like that. And you know, it's one of those things where I think a lot of us know that there's people out there that you know are visually impaired and they're doing the same type of things that the rest of us are doing. But it's nice to hear a voice and put a name to you know to the quote unquote the visually impaired population out there. So thanks for taking the time today, sharing a little bit of your story, and certainly you know all the best going forward. Have a great race in Chicago, and looking forward to staying in touch. And maybe I'll grab the tether one of these days. I'll head over your way and grab the tether, and we can get a couple miles together in a chat that way as well.
And if you do that, I'll get a couple bags of peanut M&Ms for you.
Oh boy, you know my weakness. You got yourself a deal, my friend. Thanks for taking the time, and all the best going forward.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Edgar and myself. And as always, I would love to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was your big takeaway from today's episode of the show? For me, it comes down to, there are a couple of things, I guess, but the big one that really was something that Edgar touched on and mentioned is the importance of just being aware when we're out there running. You know, we don't know what everybody else is dealing with. We don't know if somebody maybe can't see real well. Maybe they're visually impaired, or maybe they can't see because it's still dark. The sun hasn't come up yet. And you know, just being aware of your surroundings, being aware of the other runners that are in your scenario, especially at a race, at the start of a race, where it's just super congested. And a lot of times the races do start before, you know, the sun comes up, or right about at the same time that the dawn breaks. So it can be, you know, visibility can be tough. And then you've got a whole bunch of runners in and around and crowded around. Just be aware. Be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of your fellow runners. What are they doing? What are you doing that may impact them? And just try to be courteous. I think it's safe to say if you've run many races before, you've had, you know, people bump into you and maybe kick you a little bit or trip you from behind by accident or throw an elbow by accident. Hopefully most of the time, at least by accident, but every once in a while, maybe you get that jerk that does it on purpose. But if you've had it happen to you, there's probably a chance that maybe you've done it to somebody else or cut them off or started to walk in front of them without giving any advance notice. Just be aware and be courteous. You know, that was my takeaway from today with talking to Edgar about the starts of the races and how that can be just a real nerve-wracking time for him. And I feel like maybe I've thought of that before. I know it's going to be kind of a nerve-wracking time for me, and I can see. So I can't imagine if I couldn't see very well or couldn't see at all how much more nervous I would be at the start of a race. So my takeaway was real simple. Just be more aware. Be more aware. I'm probably not going to get rid of my headphones. Sorry, Edgar. I'm still going to be that guy. But maybe make sure that the volume's turned down a little bit. Make sure you can hear if somebody's makes an announcement. Hey, passing on your left, coming up from behind, about to stop. You know, stopping to walk, walking in 3, 2, 1, whatever. Make sure you can hear what's going on, even with whatever it is you're listening to. And again, especially at the beginning part of the race, when things are really congested, when it's really tied up, that's not a time to have your music blasted. Be courteous, be considerate of others, and most importantly, just be aware. So that was my takeaway. What was it for you? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com, or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/440, and leave a comment there, and that way other folks can see what you had to say, and maybe that'll spark something in them. Because of what you had to say, what your takeaway was. So that about wraps it up for today. Don't forget, DizRuns.com/giveaway or right there on the homepage, DizRuns.com. Get yourself entered to win a free custom training program. And just a reminder, I mean, this isn't just some knockoff training program. This is the same thing that people pay for. Same quality, same value as what people pay for a custom training plan for the race of their choice as well. So you're not getting anything that's kind of half-assed. You're getting the real deal, if you will. So get yourself entered to win, and good luck. Good luck to everybody who's entered in the past, and we'll be picking a new winner soon. So may the random number generator smile down on you. And with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this thing. A little bit quick episode today, but that's all right. It happens from time to time. Sometimes they're a little short. Sometimes they're a little long. It's all good. But thank you for joining me today. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the show and taking me with you wherever you were today. Much appreciated. Have a great rest of your day, and look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care, guys.